Sean, were you a big fan of the dick jokes that we got from Pete Davidson's Mirage and Transformers?
There was an inside of you joke that worked
That
without
worked
the
really
best.
well.
That worked very nicely.
Dude, you've been inside of me. That was really funny. All this and other hard-hitting conversation around movies right after this.
Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this? You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing. You know what I mean?
How? You know, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never going to get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
So chaotic.
Welcome to episode 149 of the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. He is Sean Phillips. How are you?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Oh, you know, just living the dream.
Oh, yeah.
I think the smoke really fucked with my throat and my allergies this week because I am like,
I am stunned that it didn't do anything for me. I just coughed on that actual day, like where we had a podcast where I was like, this is going to go well. But I think after that, for some reason, it didn't affect me, which is truly wondrous.
That is wondrous. That is wondrous because a lot of people are really struggling after the smoke. Not to mention, fucking Ontario, Canada was on fire, and we're all like, "Oh God, the smoke!" And they're like,
"Yeah, they're burning alive." We're like, "Excuse me,
yes,
we're a little bit bothered for a day."
Yeah, I had to turn my fan on. Excuse you. Oh my God, we are the worst people.
Good old America.
Good old America. We have a lot to cover tonight. There's a few trailers that we want to get to. Let's start with Poor Things. Sean, this looks, yeah, I think you said that it's like, I forget how you phrased it. It was something about like delightfully,
it was delightfully unhinged. Cause
yeah, that's exactly
what it
was.
I just am so looking forward to the people that are like, oh, Yorgos Lanthimos, he made that lovely period film. And then they're going to come in to see this and just immediately throw up.
What did he make before?
So he made The Favorite.
Oh, that's right.
But then before that, he made really fucked up shit like The Lobster and Dogtooth. And like Dogtooth is a like an amazing movie for which I have not. Oh, and The Killing of the Sacred Deer, all just truly messed up movies. So he's coming back to it, but this feels like, I mean, The Favorite could have been, but this feels like his blank check movie where they're like, you know what? You got your Oscar noms, man. You go ahead and do what you want, because this is just compared to all of those at least were in normal settings, but they were just completely fucked up. This is something where it's like, oh yeah, no, they're giving him everything. And yeah, it is, I don't, there's a part of me that thinks I could hate this movie because of how strange it is, but I don't know, man. It seems delightful in its weirdness. I mean, Emma Stone, especially, who was great in The Favorite. So, you know, their team up, I'm perfectly okay with. And I just think this one, like, oh, she's not playing a normal person. She's playing someone messed up.
The cast here is really interesting to me. So mm-hmm. You have Emma Stone, you have Willem Dafoe. Then you have Mark Ruffalo's in there. Margaret Qualley, as well as Christopher Abbott, which is interesting because they just starred in Sanctuary together.
They're not even in the trailer, which is actually shocking because I feel like they're big enough names at this point.
Gerard Carmichael. Just saying, if Remy Youssef,
yeah,
this is a quality cast.
Well, and then Willem Dafoe, who is not showcasing his performance so much as showcasing the best makeup Oscar. they're really laying that one on thick to make sure that could happen. Which it's so weird for me because I feel like this movie. I mean, not to like bring Oscar talk into it with just the trailer, but it could either get nominated for 14 Oscars or just not even come close to getting nominated for anything. And I don't know what it's going to be, but like there's such a like wonky makeup, wonky production design. Like the costumes are silly. This could get like a whole bunch of technicals and maybe even because of that slip into the picture. I thought about writing an article about this, but the whole article will be covered in I don't knows that I don't know if I can.
This comes out first week in September. So
God, that's a good timing. I mean, who knows what a good timing for Oscar season is anymore, but I don't know, man.
Yeah, really insane. Let's go to the second one here. This is Bottoms. This is a comedy from the team behind Pitch Perfect, as well as
Shiva Baby.
But there's one other that
The producers. Yeah,
the producers. Fuck, it's slipping my mind. Anyway, this is starring Rachel Sinnott, arguably the best part of
Bodies.
Ayo Edebiri, which I'm very excited about. Ayo Edebiri. And it just looks delightfully funny. You said delightfully unhinged for the last one. This just looks... Oh, Marshawn Lynch, too, by the way.
Oh, that is just great. I love it. And it seems like he has, like, quite a substantial role.
But this is essentially a story of high schoolers that are they're queer high school students. They're tired of being on the bottom of everything, so they basically start a fight club.
I mean, it's masked as a self-defense, but it's basically a fight club. I love that they're just making the villains in this beyond stupid comedically. This is just a completely comic aspect here. Yeah, it's not as unrealistic or weird as Poor Things, of course, but it is something where I saw it and I was like, oh, they're just kind of like turning up like the ridiculousness to an 11 with just the caricatures where I'm like, welcome to see how goofy this gets.
The other movie was Cocaine Bear. The producers of Cocaine Bear.
Oh.
The team behind.
Why don't they just say Elizabeth Banks? Just say her name. What are they?
I'm surprised this isn't an A24 film.
It's weird that it's not because it has just so much of the A24 cast involved.
And but it just feels like an A24
what
film.
What studio is it, actually?
Orion.
Oh, Jesus.
Orion Pictures. I'm trying to see who else who's like distributing it for them.
No, Orion actually did. Orion had a couple of hits last year, or at least a couple of good movies. I forget if they were hits or not, but
yeah.
I remember seeing the Orion logo in theaters last year and just being like, fucking what?
MGM.
There you go. Yeah.
So Amazon.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
But I'm looking forward. This looks so fun. Looks so funny. This was a hit out of Sundance, I believe. So I think that those are all coming to fruition. Every like big hit out of Sundance that's coming out is proving that it's not just a hit in Sundance, that it's actually just a good movie. So I'm welcoming this one as well.
You know which one's not going to do that?
What?
Magazine Dreams.
I mean, I will say people weren't really too keen on that one. And the best part of that was the part that probably people don't want to highlight anymore.
Right. So. Last trailer for the day is the second trailer for the horror movie Talk to Me. This is A24. And this is from Danny Filippo and Michael Filippo. Listen, this just looks frightening as shit.
It looks like so much fun. I mean, some people have been like putting it right next to Flatliners. I mean, it sort of has that same thing, but I think it's going to be way better. I really do love the idea of this. I love how it is, you know, it's fancy. It's got the prestige horror, but it's just so much fun. It looks like it's going to be so much fun. I love watching these trailers. It does look scary as hell. I'm into it.
Basically an unknown cast too.
I love that as well. I hope that there's some bright spots that come shining out and become movie stars from it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. This looks delightfully frightening, to continue with our, you know.
What, it's A24. It's in August, right?
It's A24. I'm trying to get the release date real quick, but it's not popping up because my computer is being a dickhead.
I think it's either July or
August. July 28th. End of July.
Okay, cool. So basically like a, you know, almost the August horror movie, which we all remember Nighthouse and how that made like $3, but was awesome. So
no, I love the Nighthouse. I love her.
Yes, absolutely.
God. So some solid movies. It's funny because I feel like I started the summer thinking there was a lot of big tentpole films coming out, like huge ones that I was looking forward to. And then when I'm trying to recall like what's left and the big ones that are coming, I'm like,
They're all coming out within 2 weeks of each
it's
other,
weird.
which is like, you know, because Tom Cruise is bitching about like not having enough IMAX screens for his Mission Impossible movie because Oppenheimer and Barbie are just like completely like dominating everything. So those three are just going to have this battle royale, which is just going to be absolutely unbelievable. I cannot wait.
We'll mention it at the end, but we have The Flash, Elemental, The Blackening, Extraction 2 doesn't impact screens. No Hard Feelings the following week with Asteroid City, and then Indiana Jones after that with Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken animated movie, and then Insidious and Joyride, Mission Impossible, Theater Camp.
Oh my God, Theater Camp.
Oppenheimer, Barbie, Haunted Mansion, Talk to Me, Meg 2, The Trench.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is coming out the same weekend as Meg 2, which... Sure. I don't know much to say about that.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the news then. I'm sorry. Let's move on to what we've been watching.
Yes.
Roll out here. Transformers Rise of the Beast. This is starring Dominique Fishback and Anthony Ramos. This is a prequel to the 2007 Transformers film. It takes place in 1994. It takes place after the events of Bumblebee. And this introduces us to the Maximals, who have been protecting essentially what is like basically the AllSpark in a way, but they just like create a different thing. And they're trying to stop Unicron, who is not Unicorn Apple, Unicron, from devouring the planet. Sean, you seem like you took that really well.
It's fine. I mean, like, this basically is the exact same thing with Fast X. I'm going to just call them the Alonzo Harris reviews, where he talks about a newspaper. It's 90% bullshit, but it's entertaining. And I think that that's the same thing that I look at with these movies. This movie was so fucking stupid. I mean, really, genuinely, at its core, stupid. You start pulling threads of this and it all comes apart. But it's robots fighting, and I had a good time watching robots fight. And I think the emotion beyond those characters did enough for me where I said, okay, you know what? I'll take this in. I'm willing to like enjoy this enough. Yeah. And it does have the emotional beats at the end, but it just doesn't stop it from being really goddamn stupid. And I just want to talk about one thing that I truly appreciated. As you said, the AllSpark, which in this case was called like the trans key, I think.
Transwarp key.
Transwarp. Jesus Christ. So I love that it's, you know, technically a MacGuffin, but it was inside the literal Maltese Falcon statue. And the Maltese Falcon the Maltese Falcon is a movie from the 40s, which was the original MacGuffin. And so I'm looking up at the theater and I'm like, and everyone else is like, get to the fighting room.
Biggest nerd for knowing that. The biggest nerd.
I don't even know if it's intentional. And I'm giving everybody way too much credit. But, you know, the original MacGuffin is the Maltese Falcon. And so this had it was in the statue that looked just like a Maltese Falcon. Now, was it also in the statue of the Falcon because Michelle Yeoh is a Falcon and she was, like, you know, determined to protect it? Maybe, but...
Because Michelle Yeoh is a Falcon?
Yeah, that was a sentence I said. I heard some of the voices in this movie, and I was like, shut the fuck up.
It's quite the voice cast in this, actually. It's
pretty impressive that, like, I looked at it after, and, you know, you just got Peter Dinklage and Ron Perlman did not even come close to recognizing either of their voices.
But... No, I agree with that. Peter Dinklage in particular, his voice, he was, like, growling the whole time.
Peter Dinklage is officially now just in, as I always say, the get that bag territory. He has been in every single movie franchise at this point. He'll be in Fast 11.
Oh my God. I had a lot of fun with this movie. I went in with zero expectations, actually low expectations, because the trailers look terrible, in my opinion. But as I've said before, I love Beast Wars, which part of this is the Maximals are from Beast Wars and all that. But I thought that this was really different than some of the other Transformers movies we saw, because it wasn't the mayhem of it all. It was a linear story. It was a story that was simple and made sense. I mean, yes, call it stupid, whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's a Transformers film. But, like, you know what you're getting into when you go see robots, alien robots. But I thought it was well acted, and I thought that the action sequences were fun. At the end, spoiler alert for people here, real big spoiler coming.
Go 30 seconds ahead right now.
Yeah. But the one thing is, like, when Anthony Ramos sort of takes on the suit, I was like, oh, people are gonna hate this, but I really fucking love it. When he like kind of turned into Mega Man. That was fun. And then the big thing at the end, the reveal, people kept yelling like different things from Transformers lore to me.
Yeah, someone said Sector 7 in
Sector 7, Sector 6, all that shit. But then it was G.I. Joe that was revealed, which had been rumored forever. And there are comics where there is a crossover. So I'm just wondering, are they going to take Anthony Ramos and start building G.I. Joe and just like then continue with Transformers shit? Or what's happening here? But that was a big pop in my theater, very big pop.
That was big for me too. Yeah, I think
it was fun.
Ramos as a G.I. Joe would be awesome as a G.I. Joe character, and I think that like is exactly what they're doing. He's a good action lead, which we didn't know that before, and so now we know that he is a really good action lead. He brings on the funny, like he brings on a realism to his character. I love that. Let's talk about the Pete Davidson of it all, because I love the reactions to this, because people are either like furious at this character or they think it's his best performance.
I think it's his best performance.
I'm a little bit in the middle on this one. I think that what he was set out to do was he was to be the fun, the jokes for the kids type of thing. And so that did work. Did he overplay his hand at that? Maybe a little bit. Like, you know, oh, he pissed himself with oil leaking. At that point, I was just like, okay, now they're doing too much of this.
But that's not
Pete's fault.
Yeah. Right. That's not Pete Davidson. That's the filmmakers.
And so, like, I think they pushed that character a little bit too far. But once again, that's the character you push far for the sake of the comic relief for the kids. And the kids don't understand. Like, there's not a little kid in there that sees him peeing himself being like, oh,
no.
That's too much. That's too much. Sorry. That was one joke too many. I mean, I think it was he was good for the adults. He was good for the kids. He was a perfect, like, because Pete Davidson is someone that even though he never saw 1994, he's good for the 90s for some reason. He's a very 90s kind of personality. So that does work out very nicely for him. And it was a good, solid vocal performance. I just think that that character went the way it's supposed to go, which is somewhat annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I ultimately just had a really good time with this. I was thinking about this last night because I actually might go see this again today. This is probably the most fun I think I had in the theater this year so far.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely like of the Transformers movies, this is my third best. I think, you know, there's been a backlash on Bumblebee. Which I still think Bumblebee is my favorite Transformers movie.
That's also a sentence you just said.
Jesus. I think that people are just like, Bumblebee's not a Transformers movie because there's not enough robot battles. And it's like, I get that, but also it's a really good movie and I enjoy it a lot. I think the first Transformers still works for me. I think it still has a lot going for it. I think I said this in the trailer for this one, where I like that, you know, granted, you see like a mishmash of stuff changing when they change into different things. You kind of see where they're going with it.
Yeah.
And I like that you sort of see their transformations pretty solidly.
Yeah.
There's like little things in there that just there's like the tiny little nitpicks that kept on bothering me. Like, I don't know, man. You're a giant robot that has a great stride, but you're going to move faster by turning into like the Mack truck that you are. Like, I love when they're like, we got to go fast now. And then he turns into a truck and goes way slower. Okay. Am I being stupid? Yes, of course I am. But there's a part of me that just made me cross my arms.
Oh my God.
I know. Trust me.
Oh
my
God.
I know I'm questioning logic in a fighting robot movie. I get that. But there's just too many things. There was too many of those moments where I was just like, come on.
I think this movie is an interesting intersection for the people that felt like Bumblebee didn't have enough of the action and enough of the robots. And then the people that get overwhelmed with the Michael Bay stuff. Because this doesn't, even the action scenes here, I think are better filmed and better laid out. You don't lose track of what's happening. But it's not as chaotic and insane as the other Michael Bay versions, Michael Bay films. So it's interesting because it, to me, in a lot of ways, this feels like a little bit of a reset for the series in a positive way. I'm happy with it, but I'm interested to see where they go from here.
I think I had like one or two Transformers toys. I don't know if I ever really watched the show. If I did, I don't really remember watching it from my childhood. According to people that are experts on Transformers mythos, they're loving this. They think they respected it quite a lot. So, you know, good on them for making something that's entertaining and also does right by the source material.
I didn't realize there were so many people that were into the mythos of Transformers until I went to the screening and they like packed it full with fanboys and just hearing them talk. I was like, oh.
So now we obviously go to different screenings in different parts, but I did get like a fan screening invite and they had like a little behind the scenes Transformers thing after the Nicole Kidman. So it was all the cast being interviewed and Peter Cullen just looks to the screen, looks to the camera, and just goes, I love you all. And even a guy that's not a Transformers dude was just like,
oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. It really, because he didn't do like his full-blown Optimus Prime voice, but obviously it's somewhat natural. And so he just kind of goes like, you know, and the fans have been great to me. I love you all. And I got some chills on that one. I was like, this is sad. Because this guy, like, I mean, I'm sure he has a good, solid voice acting career outside of this, but he doesn't need to do anything else. He just hits the booth every time there's a new Transformers movie and he's good. So,
and he's such an iconic voice now for it, you know?
Oh yeah. Also like just completely deviating, but this needs to be said. good on them for actually going to these places and filming on location.
Agreed.
I'm someone that's crapping a little bit on the effects of this, just a little bit. I think it's a lot of them were pretty good. I think that when you combine the people and the robots, it gets a little musty, but that's fine. But just good on them for like actually going to Machu Picchu. Like, it's just finally, you know, we're realizing that, hey, on location filming is better. Like, please do this more.
Ugh. Yeah, I agree with you. There's a limited edition poster that's out there that I'm trying to track down. It is a picture of Optimus Primal. It kind of, but it has a lot of colors and stuff splashed on it. And it says, "Till all are one." Oh. And I'm like obsessed with it. I'm trying to, I like emailed the reps and I was like, "Do you guys have this poster? If so, can you give it to me?" And they're like, "No, but love it."
I love that they're like, "No, we got you into the movie."
But... Oh man. I gave this honestly a 4 out of 5 because I had such a great time with it.
Yeah, I gave this once again. It's one of my C's. It's one of my positive C's. For a while I was negative on it. And then the ending does not just the very ending on what's on the card, but yeah, like the third act does work. Yeah. I think it gets a little bit slow in the second act. I think, you know, the literal MacGuffin, but in between that, there is a lot that works in this, and I'm happy to see it. And yeah, Dominique Fishback and Anthony Ramos, I want to see them come back. I think they were great.
Like, I totally agree.
They're good at talking with robots. Yeah.
Talking with robots.
Good chemistry with robots, which is a lot harder than you think.
crazy. All right, let's get into the news here. We are going to first start with talking about Bryan Cranston as well as Tom Holland, who are both taking breaks. Tom Holland had a really difficult shoot, it sounds like, with the Apple TV show that is slipping my mind.
The Crowded Room, I believe.
The Crowded Room.
He plays like a killer, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he kind of like had to go to a really sketchy mental place and wants to take time to focus on his mental health. And then on the flip side, we have Bryan Cranston, who is taking a break, it sounds like, to spend time with his wife, who he says had sacrificed a lot for him over his career or for his career. Listen, I'm all for this. I'm all for, yeah, like, take your time. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence did it when she had her baby. She was off for a few years. I'm all for this just because they have to protect their mental health as well. And yeah, that doesn't, you know, like, I think this is also one of those industries where we always look at, like, are you pumping out movies? And if you're not, you're probably a failure.
Yeah.
But actually taking time for yourself, which is what we've been promoting all across, like, any industry, is finally hitting the film industry, film and television, and it needs to be followed.
And yeah, if you got the means to do it, which I believe Holland and Cranston both have the means to do it at this point, they got plenty of cash to, like, you know, take a break mentally and, you know, enjoy themselves for a little while, and even not even to enjoy themselves, but to decompress.
Right.
Holland, I believe, also is recently sober. And so I know that this is like the second time, and not that this is any connections at all, but I recently listened to an interview from Paul Walter Hauser, who also played a murderer also on an Apple TV series. And he was also, like, you know, sober at that time. And he said it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And so I think, I don't know if Paul Walter Hauser has the means to take a break. And I think he said, like, you know, I would like a Marvel movie so that I could take a break after a while. Not even referencing Holland, just to be like, you know, give me the villain of a Marvel movie so I can have somebody to relax for a bit. He's such a good soul as well. So I wish Holland the best with that. And I think, you know, yeah, he needs to take a little bit of time off. He is really good at playing dark characters. Like, we all know him as plucky Spider-Man, but between this and also the Antonio Campos movie on Netflix, something about a devil. Damn it. The Devil All the Time.
Yes.
He was really good in that. He showed a dark edge in that. So I think he dives deep in his performances. And I think he, like, really, he may mess himself up a little bit. So
yeah,
that's good. And in terms of Bryan Cranston, I did think it was a genuine retirement. At first I didn't think it was a break. And so, I mean, when it was a genuine retirement, I would have been sad to see it go, but I'm like, bro, you made Heisenberg.
You did it.
You don't have to show up anymore. You are, like, set beyond all belief, like, in the eyes of legendary status. So yeah. Wish these two the best. Glad they're, you know, glad they have the means to and the necessary, you know, self-reflection to take some time.
I feel like there's a number of stars who are also entering a sober era. Mm-hmm. And are, like, it's becoming more of I don't want to diminish anyone that's battled with this, but it's more of a movement right now, I think,
yeah,
to, like, recognize that, you know, you don't have to have alcohol in your life to, you know, live.
Yeah, I think yeah, because like, you know, the last time this really was big was I think genuinely the 80s, and you know, they had the Betty Ford Clinic, and I think that was you know, something where, I mean, back then it was cocaine, I think, and that was just like candy, but and so a lot of people got sober throughout their 90s and stuff to, you know, try to get themselves into a better place. And
yeah,
I think nowadays I don't think it's the same deal. It could be, who knows? Yeah, but I know that most people are just saying, hey, you know, they're very calmly becoming sober, which yeah, you know,
I think becoming sober.
Yeah, like more, it's more of like they're not hitting rock bottom, they're not getting DUIs. Like it's more of just like, oh, I think this is a change I need.
Right. I agree with you. All right. Alden Ehrenreich, which is always an interesting name to say. He is one, entering his daddy era with some of the pictures that are out there. Is rumored to be reprising his role as Han Solo in the upcoming Dave Filoni master crossover movie, essentially, which is like going to take all the streaming shows from Star Wars and throw them all together with, I guess, Thrawn as the big bad. I don't know what's happening with that. But yeah, interesting. Alden might be coming back. Listen, I never had a problem with his performance, and I am one from the beginning that said justice for Solo, because I enjoyed Solo. But many people did not.
Yeah, like he was the best part of Solo. I mean, him and Don Glover as Lando were really good. And I guess like people never criticized Alden. They criticized like the fact that he was only a few years away from being Han Solo in Star Wars, and he just looked slightly different than Harrison. So, I mean, I guess that was like the weird canonical nature of it. But I thought he was great. I thought he was a lot of fun. Filoni is just a weird cat, man. I don't know what to do with this guy anymore, because, you know, the most recent Mandalorian season did a little bit too much of trying to connect all the Star Wars stuff instead of doing its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I loved that Mandalorian used to do its own thing. And Filoni, by the way, I'm not even going to, like, you know, diss this guy, because for the Star Wars community, he has done such a great job filling in so many different plot holes throughout the universe. But I think that sometimes he's trying a little bit too hard to do that. And so I don't really know what this movie's going to be. I mean, I was so excited for Ahsoka, and now, like, looking at all the trailers for Ahsoka, it doesn't look good, and I want to cry because, like, I was so excited for that. And maybe it'll still be good, but just the actual visuals of it don't look great. And if it's going to become a Mandalorian season 3 that tries to tie too much stuff together, I might be a little bit disappointed. This is me prejudging everything. I'm hoping that, like, in Filoni, I trust. Truly, I love that guy, but I don't know. Like, sometimes I'm like, stick with your animated stuff. Your animated stuff is cooler. But
I think Ahsoka is holding a lot to the chest. I don't think they're really showing a lot in the trailers. But I'm going to say this right now, and mark this time.
Go.
If Palpatine fucking shows up in this movie, I am gonna lose my shit. I will lose my shit.
What is it? I think Andor, like, no, not Andor. It is Mandalorian season 3 that is trying to do the thing where it's like, you know, hey, we're getting better at cloning. Who is that guy in the tank? We'll find out. It's like, you don't need to connect this, guys. just pretend the ninth one didn't happen. I think Palpatine in Andor or something like that is fine, because the dude was alive. I'm okay with that. Palpatine shows up in the Bad Batch. I'm okay with that, because, you know, he is the supreme ruler in that shit. So he, like, but oh god, please don't try to tie the ninth movie.
Well, it's interesting, because what you're saying is correct. They are justifying, or they're tying together loose ends, right? So I kind of appreciate that in a way. I would love to know if that was a directive, like, hey, you got to make this make sense, or if they're just like taking it upon themselves to do. I think the latter would be, I'd give them more space to do, like, if it was their own decision, because number one, creative to do that. And number two, good on you for caring so much about the property to try to fill these holes that were dug by J.J. Abrams, essentially.
And I'll say it right. Filoni, just in the greatest context I could do, Filoni loves to fill holes. Like, that dude is just, he loves to fill holes. I'm not doing a thing from Across the Spider-Verse here. The dude just, like, anything, he's just like, let's make it all make sense. And I'm like, no, dude, just forget the ninth one happened at all.
But you can't forget it. Like,
I don't know. Like, the film branch did. They decided to say, like, hey, that's it. No more films.
yeah, we're done with Star Wars.
After the ninth one came out, no more films. Just cancel them all.
Patty Jenkins is like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like, I just left Wonder Woman. Oh, wait, that's probably a good call.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I'm hoping to see him back, Alden Aaron Reich. So
it would be cool to see him back. I want that guy to have a, like, not to say doesn't have a great career, but I feel like I haven't seen him in much. I mean, he was in Hail Caesar at the same time, which he was brilliant in Hail Caesar. And the other one was most recently Cocaine Bear, where he was playing Adam Brody.
Yeah. yeah, not much else. Beautiful Creatures, Brave New World. Yeah, not much there. All right. Anthony Muschietti, of the upcoming Flash film.
Greatest film of all time. Where's my money? Sorry. I have to TV. It's going to be bad, man. Shit's going to come out.
Keeping my mouth shut. Saw it on Monday. The esteemed director, Andy Muschietti, is now attached to apparently The Brave and the Bold, the new Batman and Robin film that's coming from the new DCU. A really screwed up like sentence.
When you said that, by the way, when you said The Brave and the Bold, I almost stopped you and I was like, no, that's the new Captain America movie. And thus we have our problems.
Brave New World is.
Why would you call it Brave New World? There's a goddamn literature adaptation about Brave New World that we just talked about with Alden Ehrenreich. How many weird names do we have?
Today, we're having a day.
We're having a day.
This is really interesting to me, and anytime that you hear that a director is being tapped for something, it makes me think about two things. One is they're big on this movie, and they're trying, let's be real here, they're trying to get as much money out of this as they possibly can, because they know it's a burner movie, that like this Blue Beetle and Aquaman, they just need to get rid of them and get through them before the new DCU starts. Although I think Blue Beetle can kind of stand on its own a little bit. With Andy Muschietti, I guess my thing here is, do they like how he pulled things together? Was he easy to work with? Like, what are they tapping him for? Because I think we'll talk about this after you see The Flash. I think there's going to be some conversation there.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Flash. I've heard that basically from its insane reactions that it got, it's getting a little bit more lukewarm. People are still liking it. So I think overwhelmingly it's going to be a positive movie for the most part. And so I think with that, I think that people are, saying that this guy was pretty easy to work with. This guy pulled things together. And he's also giving us a pretty good product. And I think that with all of those together, I think that, they want to keep him in this DC. I mean, there's a part of me that says, and once again, you've seen it, sure, The Flash is sort of the end of that old DC, but they maybe it leaves things open for new DC. And I this is a discussion we should probably have next week, because I don't know exactly how to put this, but as someone who hasn't seen it.
I think here's where I'm at with it. If you want to start a brand new time, I can't even say timeline, because then it's like,
I don't even know if they want to, though, because they said they want to bring Ezra back, which I think that's just a bad idea. It's so strange. They need to like say like, hey, like hand cut down it. Right now, cut.
Yeah,
this is the new stuff. Or they need to say, hey, this is a complete continuation. I don't think they can have both ways, and they're trying to.
And I don't think that they should bring a director that did pre-DCU stuff into the new DCU, because it's going to tie back.
Yeah. And you're going to, yeah. Like, and just the artistry alone and the style alone. And even just like the news alone, where like, we find out this guy's doing Brave and the Bold. We're like, oh, they want to keep connecting the DCU. They might want to change it completely. And they just like this guy, but there's a part of me that says, oh boy, I don't know. Like, if they bring in Snyder now, like for a movie, I mean, whoa, boy, I saw those eyes turned into saucers.
Nothing more to say here.
Yeah, no, this is a tricky one, because you're walking on eggshells and I'm stomping all over eggshells because I don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it'll be, hey, if he made a good action superhero movie, I mean, hey, come on in again, my guy, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but the Brave and the Bold has to focus on the relationship between Robin and Batman. Yeah, that's a very important piece there. And like, you have to develop these characters because that's going to be the first foray into Batman in the new DCU. So I'm a little, I don't know. We'll have to talk about this next week as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see his future in it all. But, you know, get James Mangold in there.
The other rumor is that Jake Paul is going to play Batman.
Why not? Sure.
Jake Paul of controversial YouTube fame.
Of just fame.
And boxing is going to be starring in a new movie where he plays a boxer. Yeah, and he's executive producing it. Small town youth rising to international fame through combat sports.
It'll be interesting to see a boxer movie about an underdog. That would be really cool.
Never seen that before.
I mean, let's like have him grow up in Philly and like he's like a debt collector to a bunch of mobsters and, you know. He can't get up these art stairs or whatever, you know.
Can't get up these art stairs.
this obviously, this is something where even if it's good, it's going to get such a shit reaction upon its like creation and trailer and everything. And everyone's just going to shit on this movie before it's even like off the vine. So, you know, hey, maybe we all have shitty expectations and it turns out amazing. I highly doubt that. Highly, highly doubt that.
I just think that we need to stop encouraging kids or telling kids that they can do anything they set their mind to. Because, yeah, you can do it, but you can't do it well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, people are just like, what was it? Like, almost 70% of teens, their dream job is influencer, which it's not going to go well for you. because there's not going to be that many of them, and you're lucky if you do well. Go back to like making a career in music or acting, or because like, that's almost you have a better chance. Everything about this sounds horrible. You know, this is just one of those things where it will be a flash in the pan. It'll be sort of a failure, or maybe there's just enough YouTube followers that will pay money to see this crap. I don't even know if he has YouTube followers. I don't know what. I don't know what he is, what sort of entity he can do to draw in an audience. He's famous enough that there's.
But he gets the fucking audience. Like, I don't
exactly.
Get it.
There's enough there that he. I mean, I heard like, you know, as a boxer, he's bringing in the eyes. So I guess, you know, it's a dying he knows sport. He's good at showbiz. I guess I can't even get a sentence out about like how this could work, but
I just wonder what the market is for it, because it's a number one, boxing is a dying sport, has been a dying sport for a long time, and aside from Creed, which is steeped in already established IP, you have movies like Big George Foreman that flopped, and you know, other boxing properties that aren't really doing that well. I think The Fighter kind of straddled UFC a little bit in how they marketed it. Well, it was UFC.
Well, Warrior was Warrior. Fighter was Boxer, but Warrior was the one. And that, like, it's tricky because, yeah, Warrior brought in the MMA angle, which was definitely something that gave it a fresh approach. But it was just the same format as a boxing movie. A good format. I love that movie. But it is, like, that same exact format. Yeah, when it comes down to it, I think boxing movies are – it's tricky because on one hand, boxing movies are a dime a dozen. There's a million of them. But they still do make compelling drama. It's just that I can't really put Jake Paul in the same sentence as compelling drama. So I don't think, you know, hey, if this guy, I will say, if Jake Paul executive produced a boxing movie without him being in it, I got to be honest, there could be a chance that that could actually work.
I agree with you.
Like,
I agree.
Give a bunch of money to it, have him be the showman behind it, promoting it. And I could see that doing well, maybe. I don't know. I'm down on this guy. The guy's a piece of shit, first of all. Like, that's the thing we haven't really gotten into. The guy's a unbelievable piece of shit. Like, the Paul brothers are just absolutely bad people. So, you know, they could beat me up. Go ahead, give it a shot. You beat up a math teacher. What street cred do you have? So, like, yeah. Oh, you can kick my ass. I bet. Like, okay, cool. Like,
it frustrates me that they have so much fame when they're like crap people.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of it is hatred. And, you know, we've spent about 5 to 10 minutes talking about them. I mean, you know, hi, it's me. I'm the Swift.
I'm the Swift.
So, hi, it's me. Problem, see me. Is that the Swift song?
Get close. Nailed it.
I see UP.
Final story for the day. Hocus Pocus 3 is in the works.
There was no segue you could drum off of that beat.
Nope. Hocus Pocus 3 is in the works. Ann Fletcher will return to direct, and Jen D'Angelo will write the third film. They were the director and writer of the second film. This isn't a surprise. I mean, the second film was actually received really well. It was at the time, or I think it set a record for the, let me see here, through the Hollywood Reporter, set a record
streams for streams at a certain time or something.
Opening weekend by a movie on a streamer with 2.7 billion minutes viewed. It largely was successful. So it doesn't surprise me that they're going to continue this. I think what's going to be interesting is to see if they're able to bring back any of the characters from the first film that they weren't able to.
Exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think that if you're going to do this and you're going to like make this the new fresh angle, is Thora Birch needs to come back.
Yeah.
Like, you bring back Thora Birch and you're in great standing, I think.
I like to think that they know that they have a plan, but the plan is make money.
and it's interesting because the plan is make money. Once again, Thora Birch. Like, I do think there's something there. Like, you have her in the last 2 seconds of a trailer. I can sort of see it now. It's cheap. It's bullshit, but it'll get like people going. I mean, one of like Sam's criticisms with it was she really wanted them there. She wanted Thora Birch there. She wanted those original kids there. And, you know, because I think the least compelling part of this was, unfortunately, the kids' storyline in the second one, where I just kind of didn't care about them that much.
Which is going to be a through line to the next one. She's a witch.
I forgot about that crap. Yeah, see, that's what I like. I don't know. I did, you know, all due respect to those actors, they did fine with what they got, but that storyline just did not gel the way I was hoping it would. Yeah. And I almost just wanted to see the three sisters like do their thing, and that's it.
Yeah. My problem is I always want to see the three sisters like go on a murderous rampage.
Just make this the darkest movie possible. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they won their own drag show in the second one, just absolutely next level perfection, where I'm like, I don't know how you could top a good joke like that. That's too good.
Hocus Pocus, Blood and Honey.
God, yeah, sure. What's the new one coming out? There's another dark movie coming out based on a...
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan's doing it?
Oh, yeah, there's a Peter Pan one. There's a bunch of them.
Stupid.
Yeah, very stupid. Into it, though, I look forward to seeing what they conjure up with a third film.
I turned into the THX logo just there.
Let's get into rants and raves.
Except Scooter.
Yeah. Scooter's like, what the hell? <It's> like, rants and raves, starting off with, this is just minor. I mean, I feel, and you and I have actually talked about this, to be completely honest, is not allowing people to like what they like. You know, there's, what I mean by that is there's a lot of times where there'll be competing reviews out there. People are going to feel a certain way about a movie. But there's a difference between having a discussion over like what you didn't like and what you did like, and then trying to convince that person and telling them that they're wrong for liking it or not liking it. And I think that that's where a lot of this vitriol and a lot of the toxicity in fandoms comes from, is that like everyone's going to find something different in a film that they like or dislike. And that's okay. And that's kind of what, you know, makes criticism. And that's what makes these this community really fascinating. But we need to allow that. We need to allow people to kind of be the sound. This is going to be a larger message here, right? Like, just be, like, allow people to exist as they are and have their opinions, and not try to always change them. And I see a lot more of that, and there's been a lot of, like, even on some of the reviews that I've posted recently, I've gotten messages that are like tearing it apart or telling me like I'm stupid because of blah 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 blah. But listen, like, number one, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But number two, like, are you doing that to everyone that had an unfavorable response to that movie? Unfavorable take on it? If not, then get out of my DMs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone that, you know, personally did not like. The one thing I can think of is the Super Mario Brothers movie. It was, in my opinion, like, it was a pretty bad movie. But I'm not going to, like, shit on people that like it, because mainly they're kids. That would be weird. But also, I think that that's a great thing that, like, kids liked it. I'm glad a movie got $1 billion. Yeah, would I have liked, you hurt my feelings to get $1 billion instead? Sure, yes, but I know that's not how that works. And so, you know, I like that, you know, a movie succeeded, therefore causing us to, you know, like have those small movies as well. Like if $1 billion worth of people are going to the movies, that's a good thing. And so, yeah, sure, I don't think Super Mario Brothers is good. I'm judging it on my weird-ass rubric. But, like, whenever I become a parent, I will probably, like, take my kid to that, and I'll probably appreciate it more because, you know, it shuts them up for 90 minutes. Yucking someone's yum is just always a tricky thing. I mean, I've learned to, like, not get mad about other movies doing so well. Like, I've learned to just be like, okay, cool. This movie I don't like is doing well. And you know what? That means movies are doing well. And at this point, movies need to fucking do well because we're having a hard time in this business. And, you know, theaters are eventually going to all close down. So.
Yeah. It gets really interesting. And I think, you know, of course there's keyboard warriors and stuff.
Oh yeah. You know, there's internet anonymity, which does not help anyone.
It actually just happened to me yesterday because someone asked to see my Star Wars rankings and I had The Last Jedi up pretty high.
Oh geez.
And it like turned into this whole thing. And I'm like, oh, are we doing this again? Like, I don't have the energy.
Because I remember, like, Rian Johnson said, like, boy, I wish that Knives Out movie didn't include Knives Out in it. And everyone was just like, Star Wars! And it's like, are you fucking kidding me, guys? Like, just get over that shit.
My God.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hit me, Sean.
So my rant is going to be second seasons of a limited series. This is a very minor thing. But, you know, I think of something like The White Lotus, which was meant to be a limited series. Mm-hmm. And so Jennifer Coolidge won Best Supporting Actress in a Limited Series. Deserved to. Happy that she won. But then they made a season two.
With her
in it. And so now she's probably going to win another Emmy, but this time for Best Supporting Actress in just a drama series. And actually, I think she earns it even more than she did the first time. She's spectacular in it. She's really good. I think my issue is that in one of those two situations, there's a slight bit of category fraud where maybe someone else deserved to win Best Supporting Actress in a Limited Series the year that she won. And she shouldn't have really won it. I think about this with Big Little Lies as well, where Big Little Lies, you know, was a limited series and it swept the Emmys. I mean, swept the Emmys hard. Alexander Skarsgård got an Emmy. Laura Dern got an Emmy. Nicole Kidman got an Emmy. Once again, all of them deserved. But then they get a season two. And that just gets a little bit weird for me because then all those Emmys do feel kind of stolen. Because it's not a limited series anymore. It's a straight up seasonal drama. And I don't know the solution for this, obviously, because, you know, if you want to make a sequel to a limited series, you could do that. I think that either the award should be kept in a limited series.
I agree. That's what I was going to say.
And I think White Lotus especially, like, you know, that is granted there's the Jennifer Coolidge connection, but that's an entirely different series. So I feel like that should be considered a limited series. Regardless, though, the one part that like the other idea I had, which would screw over Jennifer Coolidge this year, is, you know, hey, if you win for limited series stuff and you win Emmys for limited series stuff, you're not qualifying for the Emmys if you get a second season because you're technically a limited series. Like,
yeah.
And I think that rule alone will keep people from doing that. Now, that wasn't a problem with season two of Big Little Lies because season two of Big Little Lies sucked. But I think that couldn't even get arrested in the Emmys. But I go back and forth once again. There are a lot worse things happening in the world, but there's something about it that just doesn't feel right. I think just like, you know, the TV award at the Emmys, television movie award at the Emmys, which so we have to figure that out because that is still a mess every single year.
Sean, your awards categories are screwed up. Like, I know you love Oscars, you love Emmys. There are a lot of challenges.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's the typical category fraud shit like that sometimes I just get like used to. It's like, hey, Viola Davis should have been Best Actress for The Fences. And like, well, then she wouldn't have won. And then it's like, okay, cool. Viola Davis has an Oscar and I'm okay with that more. And so like there's tiny little things like that. But then there's other ones that are just like strange beyond all belief. And inexplicable almost, but you know what? Everything about the award shows are screwed up. We'll see.
Let's turn to raves here. Quick one. First of all, happy Pride Month. And excited that the terrible drag ban that was in place, passed in Tennessee, has been ruled an unconstitutional restriction on the freedom of speech by a Donald Trump appointed judge. which just makes it all the better.
I love that.
Yeah. So it ultimately, they'll basically, they'll appeal. The attorney general of the state will appeal. But the judge called it, quote, unconstitutionally vague and substantially overbroad, which I completely agree with. Overbroad in that, you know, it wasn't specific in terms of like exactly what they were trying to cover, because they were trying to give themselves some leeway to be able to cover a lot. And it, when you don't give the general masses direction in terms of what they can and cannot do, and you leave it to the point where you can sort of over institute a law like that, it's going to get shot down for the vague piece. But you're basically, this is a constitutional infringement, in that this law was basically saying you can't do your art.
It got even to the point where it's like, you can't dress as a woman in public at all, which is just like, that's like not even like anything of like, oh, they can't have a show. No, they can't dress as a woman in public. They walk down the street. So that's like next level against freedoms. Like in any situation, not just like hateful shit. That's like just against freedom.
There were drag performers that were like, so I can't get ready at home for my show, get in the car and drive to the gig. Like,
according to that thing, they couldn't. And so it's crazy. Like, you know,
so it's just nice to see, like, you know, our rule of law is kind of like the Oscars and the Emmys every once in a while. But I'm kind of excited that especially even a right wing, judge was able to see through this and was willing to knock it down on June 3rd as it starts the Pride Month.
I love that.
Yeah.
My rave is a comedy show that's in its third season. And it's called I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. The episodes are 15 minutes. So you could probably watch all three seasons. Like, I mean, a half a day. it is very, it's sketch comedy, very SNL premises, and makes sense because this guy was a writer on SNL. It's so, so silly and stupid, but the humor does feel smart as well. Like, the actual premises are just so dumb. It's so smart. It's so funny. Like, really just genuinely funny nonstop. I just finished up the third season and just couldn't stop laughing at so many different things. I could do the Chris Farley interview where I'm just like, you know, like, remember when. I could do that for, like, you know, the next 20 minutes. So I won't do that. I won't bore you with that. But I just highly recommend this series. I feel like it is getting more popular, which, you know, if the first season has the scene where I'll do one of them, reference one of them, because this has become a meme and a lot of these have become memes. One of them
sure is about that. You sure about that?
Is like, that one? I didn't do anything. I didn't do any of it. And then the other one is the hot dog. There's a hot dog car that drives into a department store. And then it's like, who did this? And it's the guy dressed as a hot dog. And obviously it's been used as a political meme a million times. And it's just the perfect political meme, because it's just Republicans, like, you know, January 6th is a hot dog. Hot dog car. And Republicans are like, who could have done this? And
oh my God.
It is just like really, really funny stuff. It's so tricky because it is just genuinely stupid. Like, I don't think, like, it's something that I could get my parents to watch, because they'd be like, I don't get it. It's very dumb. And it is. But there's just such a, like, in this most recent season, he acts like an idiot like he always does. But then there's, like, an idiocy that surrounds the rest of it. The setting becomes idiotic as well. And the other people become idiotic as well. And for that alone, I am very, very, like, just jealous of this. He gets great stars. Will Forte has been in a few. Fred Willard, rest in peace, was in the first season. Sam Richardson is in quite a few. And I'm looking up her name, the actress in Together, which I can't remember.
Oh, whoa.
I'm quickly looking it up because I wanted her to get
that movie already.
Oh God, that movie rules.
Patty Harrison
is, I never realized this, but she is more of a sketch comedian, and she's so normal in Together, but she's just insane in this. Like, she's been in a couple of sketches, and every single one she acts the craziest I've ever seen her. So it's so weird to see her in Together in a more subdued role, and this, she's just like off the walls.
And what is this on?
This is not. Oh yeah, this is on Netflix. I will be. Have you seen any of it?
Mm-mm.
I'll be very curious. I think you might love it. Like, I'll either be getting like 20 texts from you referencing certain sketches, or like I'll find out like 3 months later that you watched it and you didn't care for it. But either way, I think that it's good for a chuckle. There's some great stuff in this third season. The problem is, it's one of the few where I break my watching rule. Where
I was gonna ask.
Yeah, I because I just watch them all together, because they're only 15 minutes long. I just say to myself, you know what? It's a Friday. I'm just going to be watching all of this because, and also because, much like other shows, you know, it's immediately online. So I feel like it's one of those things where it's like Succession. It's like, oh, I can't wait for the rotation to come. I have to just start watching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my rotation. Yep. It's very important.
It's very psychotic. All right, let's talk about what's coming out this week. We have The Flash hits theaters, Elemental hits theaters, The Blackening hits theaters, Extraction 2 hits Netflix, and the Stan Lee documentary hits Disney Plus. We're excited for that one.
I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah. Guys, if you haven't already, please check out guidethemovies.com. We recently relaunched with a refreshed team of writers, and the output has been incredible. And the, of course, Awards Watch is always one of the
Awards Outlook.
Awards Outlook. Yes, we renamed it. Awards Outlook. And there's just a lot of great reviews going up, a lot of other great content. And next week we'll be starting with Secret Invasion discussions, and a whole lot of stuff. This week, I should say.
Who's doing Secret Invasion?
Tarek's doing Secret Invasion.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
We've had Tarek on this show, right?
We haven't? No.
I could have sworn. For Secret Invasion, maybe like when it ends or when it begins or something. Yeah, we got to have him on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. So just a lot of great content. It's really exciting, and I'm glad to see that the site's like starting to pop off with that.
It's doing really good. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's really crazy. It's like overwhelming in a really positive way. So I'm like ready. I'm jumping off of our recording and going to do some behind the scenes work on the site there too. So
nice.
Yeah. Next week we'll have some Pride recommendations to round out the Pride month. And other than that, Sean, this is a busy week of screenings for me, by the way.
Dude, I'm actually kind of upset because if we do record like Saturday, there's definitely one of those that I'm not going to see. I have there's a screening for The Blackening I have on Wednesday, but there's no other like early screenings, and if a Flash or Elemental screening comes out, I'm kicking out The Blackening right away. I'll see you eventually, Blackening, but I gotta see Elemental and The Flash first.
I'm surprised they're not doing a Wednesday fan Flash thing.
It feels like that's a good opportunity to do that, especially in the summer when like kids are kind of starting to go off, and you know, they can. It's weird that there's no fan screening.
They've shown it a million times otherwise.
They've been showing it for like 5 fucking months.
What do I have this week? I have The Blackening, Joyride, Indiana Jones, and Past Lives.
Past Lives! God damn it! Let me see Past Lives!
It's not out yet, Sean.
Bullshit!
You're like, AMC's not putting it out. It doesn't come out until the 23rd.
My dog disappeared. He definitely shit all over the floor.
On that note, see ya.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.